for that matter, as a movie star who drove white motorcycles through the glamorous hills of Hollywood. I also like doing laundry for the feeling of connection it brings me, especially now, when I see my family too little, when most of my time is taken up with things they have no part of. With my hand on Maggie's skirt, I can see her small, keyhole-shaped knees, the sliding-down socks she wears, the nearly worn-out sneakers she won't let me replace. I see her schoolgirl blouses and the half-heart necklace she likes to wear every day lately, advertising the fact that she is someone's best friend. And then, saving the best for last, I see her face, her still slightly rounded cheeks, her stick-out ears, her gorgeous red hair and matching freckles. She has just learned to make her own ponytail, and she stands softly grunting at the mirror in the morning until the lumps are gone, or nearly so. I can't attend to these small things now. Sometimes I sleep at Ruth's, and I'm not there in the morning, and Maggie goes to school with messy hair, and with questionable color combinations, no doubt. She's lucky she's only 9. It doesn't really matter yet. Her bangs need cutting, her toenails too, probably. Joe can't keep up with these everyday details and still work the number of hours he's required to. I know that eventually all will return to normal at my house, and then we will feel better. And worse, too, of course. For now, I roll out pie crust, let myself be soothed by the sound of low-voiced interviews or oldies on the radio. I have learned so much lately about the salvation to be found in caretaking, whatever form that caring takes. Today, while I was rushing around the kitchen making dinner at 7:30 in the morning, Maggie asked, "Is Ruth your only best friend?" "Yes," I said, surprised at the evenness of my tone. "Oh," she sighed softly. "I'm sorry for you, Mommy." "I know you are." "Was she always your best friend?" "No." "Did you have one before her?" "I guess so," I told her, and then sent her off to school. And then I thought about Carol Conroy. The first time I made a promise with my whole heart, it was to Carol Conroy, and it required me to take care of her rabbit, Ecclesiastes. Carol, who liked very much the sound of words she found in the Bible, was leaving our small New England town to visit Disneyland for 10 entire days. My jealousy was mitigated somewhat by the importance of the task she had assigned me. "You have to feed this rabbit and change his water every day," Carol told me solemnly. "And on every third day, you have to clean up his poops. It's not too bad unless he gets sick, but you have to do it, even if he gets sick. Now promise." I stood up straight and promised with my whole heart. I could feel it straining with earnestness, because I loved Carol Conroy in the way that 10-year-old girls do love each other, with a fierce, raggedy flame destined to go out. I vowed to do everything she said, unless I died. Ecclesiastes did get sick, maybe because of some licorice I fed him, and I ended up having to clean his cage several times a day for 4 days straight. The rabbit's illness only endeared him to me. I didn't resent him. I wanted to help him. And I felt gilded when he recovered. Years later, I would say it was Ecclesiastes that prompted me to become a nurse. And now, years after becoming a nurse, in fact, years after having left the profession to take care of my family, I have again made a promise with my whole heart, again out of love for my best friend. Only this time, my friend's name is Ruth, and this time, the flame is steady, in no danger of going out. I would say it is of the eternal variety. So now it is 10:30 in the morning, and Ruth is in the bathtub,